So it is my cake day, or thereabouts, and one of the things I wanted to do to celebrate was bring you yet another episode of Hot Cross Buns, my very occasional and very disorganized podcast. What I wanted to talk about this episode was one of my favorite things. Pizza. Yes, it's not just bread here at the Bread and Smut Factory, it is also pizza. Make a lot of pizza, not as much as I make bread, but I make a lot of pizza. Homemade pizza is not difficult. It's a lot of fun, and it tastes so good. It's a bit of a time commitment, the way I do it, because dough takes all day to prepare. But that's okay, because I set it up in the morning, I let it sit all day, and then in the evening I have pizza dough ready to go. So I highly recommend it. However, in preparing for this episode, I made a friend, and my friend is a baker as well, and so I wanted to talk with my friend Sydney about her experience baking, and what she likes about pizza and what pizza's like where she lives. So I thought we could do both things in one, an episode and a chance to talk about one of the greatest, you know, cuisines, dishes that there is. Unfortunately, the recording setup that I had to use to talk with Sydney isn't the best, and so the audio quality isn't fantastic, but I hope you'll stick around anyway. It's not terrible, and I hope you'll stick around anyway to hear what she has to say, because she's super interesting. And also, I just close all of my pizza making secrets. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. Or am I fooling you? Do you fall for it all, or do you just see right through? Are you as cool as you believe? Or are you playing hide? Are you waiting just to quietly clock my guide? Are you waiting for a moment? So, as part of our big, big pizza episode, I want to welcome a guest, my friend, Sydney. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, how's it going?
It's really good. It's nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me. I feel very honored.
Oh my God, I'm so happy to have anyone that cares about silly podcast. I'm thrilled. Very astute listeners might detect that you have a slight accent that is not North American. So could you just tell us where you're from?
I'm from Australia, down under.
Amazing. And you bake as amateur like me, or you bake professionally?
Oh, like maybe not even amateur level, but a casual random fluke of a baker.
Love it.
Some achievements here, but still casual, not amateur.
What? How long have you been casually baking?
Well, the thing is, even though I only casually bake here and there, somewhat a little bit during the 6 lockdowns that I had in my city, but after I finished uni, I was an apprentice baker for about 7 months.
Mm-hmm. So already I'm seeing you are a professional.
I'm not. It was still very casual. I didn't know what I wanted to do after uni. I was like working in like as a kitchen hand somewhat, because my sister was a chef. And then I didn't know what I wanted to do, so I thought, if I can lift these pie trays out of an oven, then you know what? I'm going to be kick ass at doing a custard tart, a lamington, you know, a good donut here and there. But it wasn't my passion.
Oh, no, because, like, if you could do a good donut, I might just have to move to Australia right now. Australia, like, from my perspective, Australia has, like, a really well-developed and serious food culture. Like, as far as I can tell from a remove, based on what I see on TV and what I read, like, food is taken quite seriously in Australia. Did you study?
Oh, we're very snobby.
Yeah. Were you planning to study to work in food service? Or you just thought, I finished an unrelated degree and this is the thing I could do for a while?
It was the post, what do I do with my life decision. I was throughout uni, I was just earning money in random kitchens that my sister was working in. And I didn't know if, because I'm a giant sweet tooth, I thought maybe it would overcome me and overwhelm me with the desire to bake, but I could just never be fast enough at that time of morning. I was very proud of the things I was doing. I just wasn't that fast. So it wasn't a complete disaster, but I just couldn't be it didn't really happen.
That's fair enough. But in the last year or two, you have been baking quite a bit at home, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how did that happen?
Lots of spare time at home. Right. Kind of we had the opposite quarantine kind of pandemic experience, I will say. So everyone was leaning into anything that was, you know, meant to be the sort of hobby / give me something to immerse myself in so I don't look at the news. And we had crazy curfews. And so I learnt how to make a Dutch oven bread. It was proposed to me as idiot proof. So it worked. I actually didn't mangle it too bad. So the bread came out really good, you know, in a variety of ways, whether it was like an overnight proof or different levels of hydration. But I was so proud and it looked so professional. And I was getting the silicone mats. I was shaping those babies. It was so fun, and I just kind of surprised myself, and sort of in the process, in I guess baking different things here and there, whether it was an American style pecan pie with like bourbon and chocolate, I would share them with my neighbors who would reap the benefits of said baking experiments.
I'm sure it was just the worst for them. They must have hated it.
There is one neighbor in the area that's, you know, kind of vegan, so they didn't get anything.
Right. Oh man. But I mean, bread is vegan.
I think they were also gluten-free.
Oh my lord. Yeah, that's a challenge. I mean, I guess there's always grass. They could eat the grass.
And I never saw them again.
So you like to bake both savory and sweet things, is what I'm hearing.
I think mostly sweet. I mean, with the bread, obviously, it's kind of, you know, easy to sort of have with different things. But I don't think I'm that savvy with anything savory. Mm. I think sweet things are, you know, there's a method to it that's far more structured than anything savory. I mean, with bread, you know, there's a definite sort of guide. But I think I'm comforted by your baking sweets, really.
Oh, I totally get that. Like, for me, baking is such a because it's not a professional thing, and it's not an obligation to anyone. I mean, I'm feeding my family bread, so if it doesn't come out, it's kind of a problem, but we can always buy some if we have to. But because it's not an obligation, like, it's so relaxing for me. It's like a moment of zen in an otherwise fairly chaotic life.
Yeah.
Does baking do that for you? Like, what does baking do for you?
It probably would be a mindful activity for me. And my corporate day job gets the better of me. So if anything, baking would probably help tone down the anxious brain. I think I'm too much of a perfectionist though, and so unless I have all the ingredients ready and, you know, have cleared the bench space, of which, you know, I don't have a great, you know, kitchen set up, I think, you know, once I do apply myself, you know, as a teacher would say, I would enjoy it far more, because ultimately once I like put my mind to it, I haven't really bungled anything too much, except for like melting butter and melting chocolate. Well, I really don't quite know the trick with that.
I have lost so much chocolate in my life. I'm, as I've said many times, not really a baker of sweet things. It's not my forte. I have lost and split and spoiled so much chocolate in my life. Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a trick to rescuing it, but I've never figured it out.
Yeah. So it is, it can be relaxing, and I'll put a good like playlist on in the background. You know, it's all about setting up a good playlist, you know, the right tempo. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, I'm not thinking like Big Chill, you know, we're not really Motown, but we might be, you know, something more like K-pop. It's probably on in the background.
Awesome. So you may know that today, on episode 4 of this ridiculous podcast, we're talking about pizza. I don't suppose you like pizza?
Tiny bit. Yeah, I'm a fan. Just a bit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Because, like, almost nobody.
How fortuitous.
Yeah, really. What do you like on your pizza?
So this might be a very Aussie answer, because I really don't think in North America it's too much of a thing. Like, I found it very hard to find.
Exactly what I want from you. It's the most Aussie answer possible.
the most Aussie answer I can give you is a Hawaiian ham and pineapple pizza.
Okay, so first of all, I am not a never pineapple person. I love pineapple on pizza. We keep a vegetarian kitchen, so I leave off the ham if I'm making it at home. But yeah, I'm all for pineapple on pizza, so I'm not going to object. However, mm-hmm. when I have been in Australia and I have looked on menus and seen Hawaiian pizza, it is often ham, pineapple, and sweet corn. Is that really a thing, sweet corn?
No.
You haven't seen
that's
that?
That's a fancy place. No, that's they've modified that one.
Okay. So just ham and pineapple.
Yes, but I do tend to add capsicum, or for, you know, your audience, bell pepper. Yeah, that's what I personally add, you know, texture. It's just a good addition.
Oh, yeah. Red, yellow, green, or just red?
Doesn't matter.
Like, the green's a little bitter, but I'm there for it. We do a lot of vegetarian pizza, so a lot of bell pepper, as we call it, or capsicum, if you do. Do you make your own pizza at home?
You know, I have started to. I feel as if it's kind of like, you know, once I realized how easy it is and the ingredients are, like, it's becoming a bit more popular in terms of getting pizza bases from the supermarket, whether it's like, my favorite would be like stone baked. You can get pizza bases that are, you know, bakery wise and not just sort of generic. You know, you can get ones that are like pita bread bases. Or stone baked, something a bit more crusty, you know, really thin, crispy, or the thicker ones that already have the you know, like the indentations, the perforations, mm-hmm. I don't know what you would call it. So it's become like a real easy thing to grab on the way home. And, you know, you just get the tomato sauce, or the pizza sauce, whatever, that has like the oregano in it. And you even have like pre-packaged kind of pizza cheese, quotation marks, because it has like a blend of mozzarella and parmesan, I think. I feel mm-hmm. like there's something else, but I can't remember. So you can go really fancy, and it's so easy and cheaper than getting your, you know, neighborhood pizza or whatever chain. But I mean, Domino's has really taken off here, but you know, if you can make your own and customize and get like the dough, or you can get a dough ball as well, it's fun to do, and it doesn't even take as long as you like I would have thought it would. So
when you buy that kind of pizza dough, is it like, when you're ready to use it, is it soft and you roll it out yourself, or is it like frozen hard and you just place it like, put the stuff on top and place it like that in the oven?
No, it comes soft, and so it's really it's kind of like a fresh product in the pasta aisle, so it's kind of like good for a few days, otherwise then it's flat, and so you have to roll it yourself.
Oh, interesting. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I wish I could get that. However, I don't wish I could get that, because I'm supposed to talk today about making pizza yourself at home, which is also super cool and not difficult. But I did want to ask before we get to there, like, what is, aside from Hawaiian, what is pizza like in Australia? Like, what are the options that you would find if you went to a pizza restaurant? Is it thin crust, thick crust, deep dish? Is it crazy, super cool Australian toppings?
So it's very, Australia is really multicultural. So you do get a traditional Italian style pizza. The only time it would really be anything, you know, there's in the city, you've got like an actual sort of quotation mark, like American style New York pizza, but that's a like niche even to have pizza like that. Here, your pizza does not bend over your hand. Okay. Like, it's not floppy. It's not as cheesy as I think like a New York style pizza would be.
Right.
But I also don't think you can really get a Chicago style. I haven't seen that personally, but then in a more traditional Italian restaurant, you would get probably a thicker dough. And we're probably quite snobby in terms of preferring that neighborhood home style pizza rather than the chains, because I know you really don't even get, Pizza Hut is so rare even. I really think it's kind of like Domino's is the main chain. And then anything else is local mum and dad home style pizza, or like a restaurant that does it.
I'm not like an expert on Australia, obviously, but I am aware that there's like a lot of Italian heritage culture, that especially in like food service industry, like you get a lot of Italian and, you know, Southern European food culture. So I imagine like there's some crazy amazing like proper wood fire pizza restaurants that you can find where you live.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. And that's, I mean, if I was a more fancy eater, if I was more gastronomical, I could tell you all about seafood toppings and, you know.
That's okay.
You know,
Oh, but I did want to ask you, because I have definitely seen pizza offerings in Australia with like very Australian produce, like kangaroo and wallaby. Like, have you ever tried that? Is that a thing?
I haven't. And I could. I mean, kangaroo itself is not too, you know, it's not a very unique taste. It's very gamey, I suppose.
Right.
It's not super hard to get, but I haven't had it on a pizza. I wouldn't be adverse to it. I think I've tasted crocodile once, but it's not, you know, my local pizza place probably wouldn't have that.
Right.
Unless I was, you know, if it was right in the heart of the city, yes, you would get those niche kind of pizzas.
Right.
You know, where it's like nacho pizza or,
right.
you know, there's, I think there's one, you can get spaghetti bolognese pizza.
Ooh.
So it can be a bit wild.
So real talk, in your opinion, what makes a pizza a good pizza?
So it can't be encrusted in cheese, in my opinion. I want to see the, like, the dough. I want to see the sauce. And the toppings need to be, you know, well spread out. But essentially, I don't want a sort of encrusting, a coating of cheese. Ugh, no.
Very reasonable. Anything else?
That's my main thing. Yeah, not too much cheese. A good, you know, the ratio of sauce to the sauce to the topping. You don't want an abundance of sauce where it's kind of like covering. You know, you don't want it to look like a bloodbath, really. So
okay,
yeah, not too saucy.
So my personal opinion, and it's just an opinion. Everyone's opinion is valid, except the pizza, the people that want a billion tons of cheese. Their opinion is not valid, but everybody else's opinion is valid. My opinion is actually, despite the fact that I'm a home baker and love to make pizza, is that it's the sauce that makes the pizza. And I really, really care about a good sauce. And the sauce, a pizza sauce, in my opinion, has to have a good zing. So if I'm making pizza sauce at home, it's going to get chili in it. Like, not overwhelming, it just has to have that zip to it.
Oh, okay. So not just oregano or like maybe garlic, that might be a bit bold, but chili.
Yeah,
I haven't.
I will make my sauce by sautéing a little bit of onion, more garlic after the onion sauce, and then I'll add like a couple tablespoons of tomato paste. The Italians call it something like frise or frizzelle. I can't remember the word, but they fry the tomato paste, the mark of tomato, a bit in the like oniony, garlicky olive oil, and I'll throw in whatever herbs then, oregano as we call it, or oregano as you call it, and whatever else, and like less than a quarter teaspoon. An eighth of a teaspoon, maybe, of chili flakes. Not a lot. And then I'll add a can of chopped tomatoes to that. And so because it has the tomato paste in it, the sauce stays fairly, fairly thick once you mix in the tomatoes. And you can add salt, or sometimes I use, this is heretical, I'm sure, I use miso paste to give it like a more umami-ish salty flavor. Or vegetable stock, you know, it depends what I have around, but oftentimes just salt and pepper till it tastes right. And then I will gladly slather on sauce. I'm really light on the cheese, but I will make a bloodbath of that thing.
No, I know I'm sort of in the minority, and in general, like aside from pizza, I'm not a saucy person, if you will. In food wise, but I'm like less condiments, more you know, more topping, or like I'll do a marinade, but I don't just less saucy.
Very fair. So I make my own dough, which is not, honestly, not a difficult thing. It seems like, oh my gosh, make pizza at home, you know. How hard, but actually any straight bread recipe, by which I mean non enriched, a recipe that doesn't have butter or you know, oil in it, or eggs in it, any recipe that's a straight dough that doesn't have fat in it can be a pizza recipe. So I have an actual pizza dough recipe that I use, but like the recipe that you use for your Dutch oven bread could absolutely mm-hmm. be a pizza dough. All you have to do with it is shape it into smaller balls once you're through the bulk ferment, the process of letting the yeast develop and grow and multiply in the dough. Shape it into small balls and dough-sized balls, and you put it in the fridge for at least an hour before you roll it out flat. That's it. That's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make a pizza recipe like a bread recipe in 2 hours with a rise and everything ready to start baking. But pizza's a treat, right? It's a treat.
Yeah.
Not like something you can have all the time. So like the dough is going to be better the longer the ferments. It's going to have more flavor. It's going to have more character, which I'm sure you've also found with your bread recipe. When you make the one with more yeast, that's like in a few hours, it doesn't taste as good as the one that you've let sit overnight. Same for pizza. So I have an overnight pizza recipe, but I'm usually not very good, as this podcast evidences, of planning in advance. So I have a same day pizza dough recipe that I use that is about, 10 hours, 8 hours. So make it in the morning, bake it at night, and it's perfectly delicious. Like there is nothing wrong with this recipe. And I can barely tell the difference for the one that's, the whole 14 hours or whatever overnight. And I've adapted it from one of my favorite bread books, which is Flour, Water, Salt, and Yeast by a guy called Ken Forkish, who operates a bakery and pizza restaurant, I think in the Pacific Northwest of the US. Don't, come for me with pitchforks if I've got that wrong, but I think that's where it is. And he operates like a commercial restaurant and bakery, so his proportions are high. He's doing it based on 1,000 grams of flour and his baker's percentages, but that will make you 5 rather large pizzas if you like thin crust, and 5 like medium to small size pizzas if you like thicker crust. I have cut it down for myself to 3 pizzas, because if you don't use this dough in 2 to 3 days, like it's probably not going to be usable anymore. Yeah. The yeast will just consume all of the sugars in the flour, and it'll fall flat and be a bit sour and just blah. This is not a sourdough recipe. You can absolutely make sourdough pizza, and I have, and it's amazing, but this is done with commercial yeast. It's just done with a very small amount of it. So my recipe is the devil's number of 666 grams of flour, because that's 2/3 of 1,000. And 460 grams of water. So that's 70% hydration, which is roughly, I think, what you're doing with your bread. I think the recipe you shared to me was a little bit higher, actually, like 72% hydration, but it's a high hydration dough. Because we're going to end up refrigerating it, like having a higher hydration dough, those of you that make bread can be very difficult to work with if it's too wet. Like it's just super sticky and it gets everywhere and you can't manage it. But once you stick it in the fridge, it firms up a bit, and so it's easier to work with. So you mix the 666, what you do is you mix the 460 grams of water with like 1.2 grams of yeast. You have a kitchen scale?
Yes.
My kitchen scale isn't that fine, like to the point whatever grams, like it maybe can measure at the 1 gram, but even that's pretty iffy. Yours might be better. So I get it, I just add a little bit of yeast at a time till it hits 1, and then just a little bit of more. I've never like had a crisis because I got it to 1.3 grams or 1.1 grams of yeast. A bit of yeast, 1.2 grams is basically a healthy pinch. And not even like a super healthy pinch, like a moderate pinch of yeast. And the water should be like 30, 32 degrees warm to the touch. Like you can feel it's not cold, but not hot because that'll kill the yeast, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
And you let that sit. Well, I'm using active but not instant yeast, I think it's called. So I let that sit for 5 minutes just to let the yeast activate a bit, but you won't, not like a normal recipe where the yeast foams up. There's just not enough of it to really see a big effect. You just have to trust that it's doing okay. You might see a little bit of tiny bit of speckle of foam on the top. Most bakers will wait to add salt because salt and yeast don't love each other. but I have never had, it's kind of a challenge to get the salt in evenly if you add the flour first. And I've never had a problem chucking the salt in at that point. So I do, it's 13 grams of salt. And then slowly mix in 666 grams of flour. You use bread flour when you bake? Is that even an option in Australia? Oh, my flour I use is Australian, so you must. Yeah.
Is it? What?
Yeah.
No, generally it's plain flour, aka when I look it up, it's all-purpose flour, I think.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, bread flour makes better bread, and it definitely makes better pizza dough, in my experience.
Yeah.
However, Ken of Ultimate Pizza Knowledge wants you to use 00 flour, which is an Italian flour that is most often used for pasta, and it's super soft, so, and not high protein like my bread flour. Mm-hmm. So I think AP is probably going to be just fine. You mix it up, but not like to knead it, just till all the ingredients are combined. It maybe it's coming away a bit from the side of the bowl if you're using a mixer. If you're doing it by hand, until you don't see any more like specks of white flour. And then like your bread, probably you let it absorb the water for a while, which is the, I always get the pronunciation wrong, but I think it's autolyse or autolyse period, which is can be an hour, half an hour or something. And then you stretch and fold it. Does your recipe call for stretching and folding?
Yeah, that's the fun part for me in terms of the shaping and just like, you know, kind of the ball, but you're like folding it. Kind of like folding it to so it's like not a perfect circle, if anything, but it's almost got a flat bottom, but just like a very good circle and not just like a, yeah, not a perfect circle, because if anything, the top is, I don't know how to describe it, but it's just, it's not perfectly round because you're folding almost like an envelope underneath, if that makes sense.
So this stretch and fold, after you stretch and fold it, it's going to stay in the vessel that you're proofing the dough in for a long time. So all you're really doing is you're keeping the dough in the bowl. You're taking the side that's furthest away from you and sort of pulling it up and stretching it up and folding it over the top. And then you rotate the bowl, you know, an eighth of the way and do it again. So 8 times around and you're done. You cover it. You might let it sit another half hour and do it one more time, but one stretch and fold is enough. And then you're covering it and letting it sit for 6 hours. So it's 6 hours proofing out on the counter, unless, I mean, it's hard to imagine even in Australia being too hot to keep it on the counter, but you could, you know, put it in a cool, a dark cupboard if it was way too hot. But I live in heat and I keep my dough out on the counter and it's never been a problem. After the 6 hours, I'm dividing that dough into 3 roughly equal portions. I don't weigh them out because I'm not that organized again, but you could, if you wanted, get 3 equal portions of dough. And then you're exactly. And then you're shaping it like you would a mini loaf of bread. You're enveloping it and creating a skin over the top by stretching it up and under, and then, you know, rotating it with your hands until you get a nice tight ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put it in 3 separate, but you could put it in 1 larger pan. You're either putting some flour, or I use olive oil around it because it's going to grow. The whole thing's going in the fridge, but it's still going to grow in the fridge, and you want to be able to separate them afterwards. And then, you know, after that 6 hours of proof, it's maybe another hour in the fridge, 45 minutes, and you can use that time to make your sauce and heat the oven. I bake.
And how hot's the oven?
Okay, great question. I bake on a flat stone on the bottom of my oven, not a pan. So I'm trying to get that stone as hot as possible before I get the pizza on. So I go to the max. My oven's not great. I think 250 Celsius is the max that my oven goes to. But I'll put the fan on even, and I'll heat from the bottom only to concentrate all that heat in the stone rather than like trying to heat the interior space of the oven. Pizza stones do not have to be expensive. Like mine is just a terracotta tile. I think if I spent $10 Australian on it, I'd be amazed. It was really, really cheap.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Like you can buy fancy ones. You can buy round ones. You can buy like branded ones, but a pizza stone does not have to be expensive, and it can just live on the bottom of your oven. I bake my breads on my pizza stone. I don't bake them anymore in a Dutch oven because I want to make two at a time, and my oven can't fit two Dutch ovens, and I don't own two of the correct size to make the bread. So mine just lives there. They say never take it out and clean it. I can't live like that. I have to clean it occasionally, but I don't wash it. I just brush it. And I've never had a problem. I hear they can crack if you get them wet and then bake in them again. But thus far, fingers crossed, no problem. And once the oven is to heat from that bottom heat and the sauce is made, then I'll get one ball out at a time and I'll roll. I like super, super thin crust. So I'll roll it out as flat as I can. I'll put it on that flat dough on a piece of baking paper to facilitate moving it around. I'll slide it onto an upside down baking sheet again, because I don't have forget what they call them, but I don't have a paddle for moving the pizza, though you could certainly get one. So I'll carry it around on that baking sheet, and then I'll sauce it and put the toppings on. I'm like you, light cheese. I'll cut up like a ball of mozzarella and put half of it on one pizza. So like maybe five thinner slices of buffalo mozzarella, maybe a tiny bit of shredded cheese if it's really big and that's not enough. And any toppings, we do a lot of spinach or capsicum, olives, capers, whatever, and certainly, you know, meat options are totally cool. I just don't have them in my kitchen. And then I'll take the whole pan over to the oven and slide the pizza on the baking paper, which wants to move around, it's not sticky, onto the pizza stone. I have plenty of burns on my hands to prove that it's not as easy as that, but, you know, basically it's not that hard. Yeah, baker's peril, I call it. And at that point, I'll change the setting of the oven to heat both from the bottom and the top, so that you're also getting some heat from the top. But really, if you don't want your pizza floppy at all, bottom heat is perfectly fine. The heat will come up through the stone and it will cook the top of the pizza in time, probably, hopefully, before you burn the bottom. And I just look for the cheese. Once it starts to brown thoroughly, then I know it's done. So far, that has worked fine. If the oven is at heat at 250, maybe 10, 11 minutes of baking, it's not super long. Yeah. It's not instant. Do you think would ever try making your own pizza dough at home rather than picking it up, or does it sound like too much work?
Well, you're making, I want to instantly Google a pizza stone at this rate. I think you have inspired me a little. No, if it is sort of accessible in that way, and obviously it's not, you know, all these ingredients aren't exactly, you know, hard to get or, you know, needing a niche kind of supermarket, then it would be kind of fun to, you know, make this myself. And especially again, the bake time, and you know, if it's just something that I can do on a, say I'll do it on a Friday night or something, and then put it in the fridge, or, you know, do it for a Saturday morning and, you know, have something to look forward to on a weekend where it's still low maintenance.
It's totally a weekend project because it, at least the way I've described it, it wants a whole day of dealing. I mean, you're not dealing with the dough the whole time, but, you know, you basically have to have some morning time and some evening time. There are quicker recipes, and there's plenty on online if you want one. Like, if you have to have pizza and their store is closed or whatever, like, you could make a pizza dough in 2 hours. Or you could make your own recipe for bread, and it would be a fine pizza, honestly. I've used bread recipes for pizza, and you can barely tell the difference. They're not really that different. If I didn't have a pizza stone, I would bake the pizza on the back of a sheet pan, and I would just let the sheet pan heat up on the lowest rack in the oven before I put the pizza on. But you'd want it as hot as you could get it. Otherwise, the top is going to cook before the bottom is really done. And I don't like, you know, floppy is a little floppy is okay, but I don't want soft pizza. That's not fun. That's not a good time.
Yeah. No. Soggy. Well, no. Soggy with like oil and cheese. No. No.
Right.
Can't do it. No. That's not pizza. But I mean, when you make that pizza sauce with the zing of zesty chili, are you making a quantity that you can put aside and say, like, you know, I can imagine that the quantity wouldn't just be for, like, you know, 3 pizzas even, maybe.
That recipe with a can of tomatoes and 2 or 3 tablespoons of tomato mark of what do they call it, tomato paste. That recipe is just about enough for 3 pizzas for me, because I'm a glutton for sauce. But you know, as you probably know, like, tomato sauce just gets better the longer it sits around. Like, unless it's spoiled, as long as you can let it sit and develop the flavors, the better it gets. So I have made multiples of that recipe, stuck it in a jar, a hopefully sterilized jar, and stuck it in the fridge for a couple of weeks till the next time I wanted to make pizza, and it's always better the next time.
Yeah.
God, I love pizza sauce. Wow. I could
really, good pizza sauce. It's not even necessarily about the dough, but I'm like, okay, maybe I need to broaden my horizons. I didn't really think of, you know, aside from like tomato paste, and I guess they throw in oregano. Yeah. I like the thought of, you know, maybe that, like, just very like tiny pieces of onion or something, or the little bit of garlic. I mean, it makes sense. But I am so basic. I just didn't think of that myself.
So Ken Forkish, again, whose bread book I use for so many things, he makes his pizzas with just canned chopped tomatoes. He gets like nice Italian canned tomatoes. He doesn't even put oregano in them. He's like super simple, no salt, just the tomato. Mm. And like, I guess that's his thing. But for me, yeah, I want a zesty sauce that's garlicky and basil-y and oregano-y and oniony. I want it all. But if, you know, if you started making pizzas at volume, 3 pizzas on a Friday night or a Saturday night, like, I could imagine you would be the most popular neighbor in your neighborhood. People would be like clamoring for invites.
I mean, I bring the bins in for my neighbors, you know, sometimes, you know, they'll ask, can you bring the mail in? And, you know, every now and then a random sweet, a random dessert of whatever, you know, the theme is or something. But, you know, I try and pay it forward in some way. And, you know, I haven't like bungled anything too much, or I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't give anything away if I did. But, you know, I think if I made this like pizza dough with a zesty sauce that's not out of a tube or something that you just like squeeze out, that'd be so popular.
Right. Oh my God, they would love you. Though, have they started like, I'm sure they do. It sounds like it. I want to move next to you.
It's so wholesome.
Have they started, like, you know, nudging you, like, so how's the bread baking going? You got anything coming up this weekend?
They haven't. I think, well, they know it's, I'm not too confident in, I need to be, like, you know, encouraged, or I need to get this idea and then I can think of something unique to make, because I don't want to be generic. I said, give me a favorite, like, can't lose kind of recipe, and I'd ask some friends online to give me a recipe that, again, idiot proof, can't bungle it, but again is not super generic. And I'd had this recipe for cookies. It was from a TikTok, no less. So it was a super short recipe. And it was all about kind of browning the butter. That was kind of the trick, in like browning the butter on the stove, not microwave, but it was that was kind of the hack. I took it to work, and the comment from the biggest boss was, he had one, and he said to me, wife material.
Nice.
Right? Oh, the validation.
Wow.
Yeah. So I really should apply myself more, you know.
I mean, I think you're doing fine.
Affirmations.
Sure. So I didn't prepare you for this in any way, but can I ask you a few Australian cooking questions?
Okay.
I don't want to stress you out. It's cool if I can. No. But okay. Question number one, the pavlova. Is it Australian or is it Kiwi?
Well, I'm sure you realize that once anything becomes successful, it becomes Aussie. If, you know, you do something wrong, Russell Crowe, he becomes Kiwi again.
Right.
So when he's in trouble, he's so Kiwi. But right. No, pavlova is so Aussie. Pavlova is so Aussie. The one time when I experienced my first American Thanksgiving, my last North American trip, I stayed with friends in Kentucky, I made a pavlova. That was my contribution.
So I have really struggled in the past. I think I finally have it down to make pavlova. And it's because I've admitted to you and to others many times, like, sweets are not like my forte, but I really struggled for a long time with meringue, getting them to hold and getting them right. Like, that they would always end up grainy and overbeaten. Like, they would go from liquid to overbeaten in like a second. But what I realized, what I learned, is that, at least for me, but I think it's just true, it's all about the timing of when the sugar goes in. I used to dump the sugar into the egg whites before I beat them. Yeah.
Big no dumping. Huh? No dumping. But no dumping. It's a gradual. Yeah.
So you let the egg whites get a bit foamy before you even start, and then it's really slowly getting bit by bit the sugar in, and then folding in a bit of cream of tartar for stability afterwards. I don't know if you do that.
No, I don't know. I didn't throw that in.
Cream of tartar is like slightly acidic, and apparently the acid in it helps the meringue hold longer. And then I guess the other thing is the low, low, low setting on the oven when you bake the meringue.
Oh, like, it has to be
super low. You're trying to dry it out. You're not trying to bake it.
Exactly. But yeah, and once it goes too far, it's hard to repair. Just like a souffle, you know, once it's puffed, you're done.
Exactly. Well, Sydney, I want to say thank you so much for coming and talking with me about pizza and about baking in Australia. It was so much fun for me.
It was heaps of fun. I'm glad I could regale you with my very non-culinary mind.
God, I loved talking so much with Sydney. First of all, she's super interesting, and I already love everything about Australia anyway, so hearing about what things are like in Australia, and pizza is like in Australia was incredible. And then, you know, bonus, she has a voice to die for. So, you know, for an audio community, perfect. I hope you've enjoyed this little pizza talk. I am absolutely willing to keep talking about baking and bread as long as you are willing to keep listening to me talk about it. I think I've demonstrated that over the last 4 episodes. So what would be great is if you have questions or things you want to know about baking. I don't necessarily have the answers, but I am willing to use my incredible Google skills to find out the answers if I don't already know them. And I will happily talk with you about baking and answer your questions. Also, if you are a new, aspiring, practiced, expert baker, and you would like to talk to me about baking, I would happily have any one of you on to talk about baking. Just get in touch. It has been a crazy year for me. An incredible year with a lot of change and a lot of new ventures. This podcast being one of them. I just want to thank you for sticking with me, for giving me your support, for writing to me, talking to me, sending me your comments, upvotes, follows, whatever. Really, really appreciate you. I continue to be motivated and affirmed by your presence in my life. So thank you really sincerely very much. Have a great next year. Bye.